If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. The decline of an American icon, IBM, and how to fix it before it's too late. Former IBMer gives us the inside story tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Peter Grulich spent 30 years as an IBMer, going from sales to systems engineer to brand manager to worldwide market manager. He's spoken with thousands of IBMers across the globe in his new book, Think Again, IBM Can Maximize Shareholder Value. He was on our show previously for his book on IBM, A View from Beneath the Dancing Elephant, Rediscovering IBM's Corporate Constitution. Welcome back, Pete. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, but before you start off, tell folks, that you're a loyal IBMer, what it means to you, that you're not some sort of bitter ex-employee kind of deal.
Oh, absolutely. I spent 30 years at IBM, and it was the greatest experience of my life. I remember standing in line one time, getting ready to fly to one of the sales education seminars that I used to conduct for IBMers around the world. And this young man was standing behind me, and he saw my bag, and it had labeled IBM on it. And he asked me how long you worked for IBM. I said, 25 years. And he looked at me and goes, oh, my God, how could anybody work for one company for 25 years? And I looked at him, and I said, you don't understand. I've changed jobs every 3 years. The company believes that if you do your job, the next job is just to be had for the asking. And I said, I've had 8 jobs in 25 years, and I've changed my job and my career, and I couldn't imagine doing that with any other company. And he just looked at me and went, wow, that's a real selling point. And I said, gave him my card and said, give me a call. I'd like for you to work for IBM someday. So no bitterness. It's just a desire to see IBM to get its greatness back. And in order to do that, it needs to kind of get its institutional memory back. And that is understanding that the productivity of the corporation is really dependent upon whether their employees are engaged, enthusiastic, and passionate about their work. And hopefully that comes across in what I just told you.
Yeah, it does, definitely. And this issue that you raise on a one company level, we've now seen it in 3 different ways on our show. This is the third way. This focus on maximizing shareholder stock price only ends up to the detriment of the overall corporation. We had a guy on who basically says Harvard Business School pushed this metric in the mid-'80s, and the net result at the end of it was the financial crash. We have the CEO of Young & Rubicam, and he believes that a lot of the stagnating income and income inequality has come from moving away from stakeholder maximization to just stock mm-hmm. price. So what I want to ask you first off is, for whose benefit should a corporation be run?
Oh, man, that is a great question, Jim. Here's the deal. I entered the study of IBM 6 years ago and didn't have an opinion. I just kind of decided to do the research and let it, kind of unveil itself as I went through studying 100 years of its history. And when you look at IBM's successes and failures, that its greatest successes have been found, have been built upon a business-first philosophy, and that business-first philosophy is built around an equitable distribution of profits to IBM's what I call stakeholders. And stakeholders, I define and write about in my book, are its customers first, its employees, its shareholders, and then its obligation to, you know, be a good corporate citizen within society. So, you know, the title of my book, IBM Can Maximize Shareholder Value, is a very positive title, and I intended it that way, because I think it's not maximizing shareholder value that's truly wrong. I think we ought to be trying to maximize stakeholder value, which would maximize shareholder value. But the how that IBM has been going after it, and there's three instances in IBM history that it's gone after it in the wrong way, has always led to failure.
And it's interesting.
Does that make sense, Jim?
It's a very profound point that in order to maximize shareholder value, they have to stop maximizing shareholder value, meaning. And they've done a lot of financial engineering. You talk about they bought $166 billion of stock back, and you think that underinvests essentially in stakeholders.
Oh, well, absolutely. And in fact, there's two numbers you'll hear me use, and I don't want anybody to get truly too confused. You'll hear me talk about $190 billion since 1995, $166 billion since 1999. I like to use the $190 billion because a lot of people tend to think that, you know, this started with Sam Palmisano when he took over in 2002. Mm-hmm. But actually, IBM started buying back its stock in 1995, and since then has bought back $190 billion worth of stock. And that started in 1995, which was just 1 year after it laid off some 30,000 to 40,000 employees. And you know that's a symptom. You know, one of the things I like to talk about is, you know, where else could they have invested that money? And if you look at the, you know, timeline for artificial intelligence, in 1995, IBM started their share buybacks, spending about $5 billion. In 1996, Deep Blue won its first chess match, and they had, by that time they'd spent about $11 billion on stock. In 1997, you know, Deep Blue wins its first six-game match, and by then they had spent $18 billion. And then artificial intelligence just went quiet until 2011. And then suddenly it comes back to compete with Jeopardy, and they spent $150 billion on their stock.
Well,
they could have spent that somewhere else.
That is pretty found. You also make these points that their sales force productivity is down 46% per employee, and net income's down 10%. And obviously productivity is what drives growth. But another thing that blows me away, and it's been covered up in a way because of the focus on the roadmap on price per share, right? You buy stock back, you reduce the denominator, and you can make it look like you're growing. But in 2012, IBM had $17 billion of profits. In 2016, they had $12 billion. In other words, their actual dollar profits are down 30%.
Right. Yeah, and you'll see, you know, Jim, as you probably read in my book, is that I focus on productivity because, as you said, it ultimately what drove America in the 20th century and gave us such wealth as a society was the ongoing improvement of employee productivity. And when I looked at the profit productivity numbers, it's actually down 10% overall in the 21st century. And I think something that's really telling is that, just as you pointed out, not only is profit down, and in fact, that's the quarter-to-quarter kind of Wall Street thing today, right? 21 quarters of declining revenue. Yeah. Well, boy, that's really bad. But when you start talking about 17 years of declining profit productivity and revenue productivity, there's a systemic problem at IBM that needs to be fixed.
Let's look at some of the, in our last couple of minutes here, some of the culture crisis drivers that have changed the nature. And first off, in this day in 1999 when they changed the from defined benefits, you call it almost, or at least I interpret it almost as the day IBM died.
Yeah, I call it a watershed event. And Lou Gerstner in his book, Who Says Elephants Can't Dance, says that this affected a small number of people, and there was a small revolution. But in reality, it affected over 50% of the IBM population at the time. Most of us were here in the U.S., and not only did the U.S. drive, but it was where the product managers were located, the development organizations. And when he made that decision in July of 1999, I think every employee suddenly, you know, realized that when he said, "It's not your father's IBM," it meant something completely different to him than it did to all the employees. And, you know, it was a watershed event for every employee within the, employees in the U.S. And then that policy has continued. It's been rolled overseas with Sam Palmisano. They took away the defined benefit plan from the U.K. employees 10 years later. And then more recently with Rometty, she's continued on the same path where she changed the 401k contributions to where you get nothing if you leave the company before, you know, the mid-December.
Yeah, that December.
Of the year.
In the last minute, could those things have been avoided, or are they just so inevitable now with the pressure on performance? I mean, could IBM have done any different?
Oh, you know, a CEO has the opportunity to drive their own, if nobody else, you know, has the ability to determine the fate of a corporation. I know there's a quarterly drive for earnings. Mm-hmm. But once again, we need chief executive officers that stand up again and talk about productivity and driving higher sales and profit productivity, not taking a short-term path. Does that make sense, Jim?
Very good, Peter. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Coming next, we'll look at a little bit more detail how IBM has changed.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction, Hope, and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with former IBMer Peter Grulich. We're going to look at how these changes have evolved over time and through the prism of nine CEOs they've had. Now, obviously, Tom Watson Sr. and Jr. Are the foundation of the company. And I might say right off the bat, Watson Sr.'s stock return was 17% versus the average of the market at 11%, and Jr. was 21% versus 9%. 21% is exactly what Buffett has done. Tell us what they did to set the foundation.
I think it's a fascinating story in the what I call the Watson era, father and son. And I think this is probably the first time anybody's ever really looked at both of them and asked what's been consistent between father and son and what hasn't been.
Mm-hmm.
And the consistency between both of them was the belief system. Watson Sr. said, hey, go out there and spend a lot of time with your customers, make them happy, go the last mile to do the right thing, and, oh, by the way, give full consideration to the individual employee. Watson Jr. picked that up and maintained that consistency of belief system, and this really strengthened IBM, and he brought it down to three words, respect, service, and excellence. What he changed that fundamentally just enabled IBM to just take off, and Jim, probably some of the numbers here would have your audience, your listeners, would wake them up. At the end of 1955, IBM had 56,000 employees, and that was after four decades. Watson Jr. added 56,000 employees every 4 years.
Yeah.
At the end of four decades, revenues were $700 million. Watson Jr. added $700 million every 1.5 years. At the end of four decades, profit was $73 million. Watson Jr. added $73 million in profit almost every year. And the way he did that is he took the company from a what I call an entrepreneurial monarchical society to a constitution where he decentralized, similar to what Alfred Sloan did with General Motors in the 1920s.
And I might say over this time, IBM wiped out GE, Honeywell, DEC, RCA, Sun Micro, and a whole bunch of others. we're going to move to Vin Learson now because this he contrasts well with the current paper buying stock back. He bet the entire company on the System 360. Tell us about that.
Tom Watson Jr., when he took over in 1956, saw a shift coming with computers, and he pulled Vin Learson in as his kind of his touchstone, a certain, you know, the loudmouth touchstone. It was, I think one person described him as a porcupine with quills that would prick you as you walked by.
Hmm.
And he decided that he's going after the mainframe. And he's going to, you know, between he and Tom Watson Jr., they're going to invest. IBM invested $5 billion, which was, you know, 1 to 2.5 times what IBM spent, or what the U.S. government spent building the atomic bomb to actually get ahead of the competition, as you pointed out. And they were very successful. I mean, it's still driving the lion's share of IBM's profits today.
I think you were. I think in constant dollars, that investment would be $137 billion now, which is slightly
That's
less
right.
than the stock buyback. Now, Frank Carey and John Opel were there when I were there. And you talk about them making some fundamental mistakes. And, of course, my favorite is that John Opel missed his revenue plan, now going on 30 years. He still hasn't made what he was supposed to make it. But talk briefly about them, right. The failure of FS, et cetera.
You know, I've gotten feedback even since I published my book, and IBMers have been reading it. And I think Frank Carey was probably one of the greatest chief executive officers that IBM had. You have to consider the decade that he had when mm-hmm. there was economic stagflation.
Yep.
He had the lawsuits. The way I write about it in my book is that it was a decade of three Category 5 storms, economic, political, and competitive. There was a project called the Future Systems Project to replace the System 360 and make that kind of an investment again. And the head of that was John Opel, and he failed. And underneath a Watson Jr. or Watson Sr. era, if you failed an executive like that, the way they stopped the Peter Principle was they moved you aside. You didn't lose your employment, but mm-hmm. you lost your job. And Opel, again, as he became CEO, as you said, set an expectation that we'll have a $100 billion IBM by 1990. Most IBMers remember that, but he actually even said a $180 billion IBM by 1994.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that number before.
Yep.
And for the record, I think IBM's at, what, $81 billion right now in 2017?
Yeah, they hit $107 billion, I think, in 2011, and it's been going downhill ever since.
And we'll say before we move on, Opel also made a fundamental one-time fire sale by, we won't get too complex, but by basically taking it rental inventory and giving it a one-time sales price that also was a long-term negative. Now, John Akers, he's considered the only IBM CEO to have failed.
You know, that's why in my book I really took a hard look at it. If I had just looked at the CEO standalone, I don't think it would have had as much meaning. I tied him into an era that I call the arrogant, you know, chief executive officers. It was a time that he was set up for failure, as far as I'm concerned, by John Opel.
Interesting.
Opel set an expectation, as we just talked about, and then Akers' mistake was not reversing direction fast enough. You want to feel sorry for him, but he was on the board of directors. He knew what was going on. And when he took over, he should have said, look, these are numbers we can't make, and we've got to reverse what we're doing and get our heads back.
And then he blamed the employees, right?
That's right. He made two classic mistakes, as far as I'm concerned. One, it's not my fault. It's the employees' fault. And number two, he listened to Wall Street and said, hey, I'm going to break this company up into, you know, baby blues. And within 1 year, one out of every three shareholders sold their stock. And it dropped by 33% in 1 year.
And that leads to the next guy, because Lou Gerstner was brought in from the outside. The first thing he did was not decide to break up IBM. But when I read this, I got kind of a tale of two cities with Lou. Big success and then not understanding the culture.
I refer to him as the Shakespearean king. Right. He came in and he had the concept right. He got his messages right. He talked about one IBM. He talked about putting the customer first. He talked about breaking down internal bureaucracy. He talked about taking the battle of the competition. And the way I put that in my book is, number one, it woke up the IBM culture that had gone to sleep. We all had just kind of listened to Akers and, you know, it was kind of like putting us to sleep. And then finally, we all knew it was time for change. And Lou Gerstner came in and said, let's go do it. What he fails to point out in his book is during that time frame, the culture supported him. I mean, we went after it. And then the second thing he really fails to point out, and probably even we should acknowledge this in our culture, is that the U.S. economy hit the Great Expansion. It was the longest expansion in the U.S. economy, started in March of 1991 and went through March of 2001. Which is a pretty good parallel for Lou Gerstner's time at IBM.
Let me ask you this, Pete, because you say this in the book. What does it exactly mean? The Gerstner, respect for the individual is obviously the Watson's number one value belief. And he said respect for individual had become the most corrupted IBM belief. What did he mean by that?
Well, I can only, you know, you'd have to ask him. Maybe you can get him on the show. But I think,
he lives,
you know, being an employee... Yeah, I think being an employee is that he got isolated behind his generals. I've talked to several executives that said that as soon as he felt like he had the right generals in place, he kind of, you know, let the company run and didn't come back and inspect his generals. And I think what they did is they, you know, said, hey, look, these employees down here, They did exactly what Akers did, is they blamed the employees and just said, look, it's this respect stuff that's causing problems, and that wasn't it.
All right, you listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell. We'll be back in the next segment for the final two CEOs and then the human side of the IBM culture crisis.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College real estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
Imagine what it's like to be active your whole life and then find out you're going blind. I have age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. As a wife, mother, and grandmother, my sight is precious to me, so I was relieved to find that treatments for some forms of AMD are available, and research for additional treatments is underway. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org, where I found so much helpful information. Call 1-800-BLINDNESS today.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
Hey travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1769. 855-325-1769. That's 855-325-1769.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams.
So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're talking to Peter Grulich. He's the author of Think Again, IBM Can Maximize Shareholder Value. And to get back to the final two CEOs, and Sam Palmisano and then Ginni Rometty. And Sam's was considered a very successful tenure, and Ginni so far has been kind of a disaster. But they're really both related to the roadmap. Tell us what the roadmap is and how destructive it's ended up being.
Yeah, Jim, it has been probably the number one, you know, iconic failure that I would attribute to Sam Palmisano. He established two 5-year roadmaps, and the goal was to drive earnings per share. And to give you an example of the effect it had on IBM employees is that they effectively, whenever they'd hear about the roadmap, it'd say, we're just roadkill. On these roadmaps. And what it basically did is we will do anything to drive profit. He wasn't worried about profit productivity, because that's been falling since 1999, as well as sales productivity. He was concerned about driving the bottom line. And there's a lot of ways to drive profit productivity or drive what appears to be profit productivity through financial engineering, and that's transferring wealth within the corporation. And that can be, you know, transferring, you know, changing benefit packages under Sam Palmisano, where he actually, you know, as we talked before, in the UK, eliminated their defined benefit plan. And Ginni Rometty, who, you know, has taken action similar to that by changing the 401k plan, the separation plans that IBM has had. And they're no longer, you know, industry leading, but basically just meets minimums for employees, if that.
Now, you talk about Gerstner coming in when there was a cash crisis and really going and fixing that. But now you call this a culture crisis. And does that mean that in Ginny's existing CEO right now, that she's really going to have a tough deal fixing this stuff because the culture is sort of in whatever you want to call it, trouble, limbo?
Right. One of the things I've done is I've actually gone back and studying IBM history is that there's actually, in my opinion, been 5 crises, and this is the 6th. The 5 crises were, you know, when Watson Sr. came in 1914 and 15, and at that point there was a culture and a cash crunch, and he went to work and fixed both. In the recession of 1920 and 21, there was a cash crunch, and you know, he took actions that he thought he needed to have, which was lay off people. But actually, from that, what he learned was the power of having a dedicated employee standing in front of a loyal customer with the latest products in hand to sell when a recession ended. And that was kind of what took IBM through all these crises after that, is that they would double down on research and development whenever a recession hit. And they would ensure that they maintained and held on to their best employees and kept those employees out in front of the customers so that every time a recession, they always end, at least they always have so far, you had a dedicated employee in front of a loyal customer and you had the best products. And when that recession ended, boom, you were gone. The difference today is that when we had the recession the early 2000s, IBM was investing in stock. Mm-hmm. They weren't investing in artificial intelligence. They weren't investing in the cloud. They weren't listening to their customers. They were having resource actions that was impacting sales and profit productivity. And therefore, you didn't have loyal, you know, dedicated employees. You didn't have loyal customers because they didn't know who to call anymore. And no longer did you have, you know, the best leading edge products. IBM should have been out there leading cloud, not Amazon. They should be leading artificial intelligence, not, you know, be competing tooth and nail with Amazon, Google's, you know, Facebook, and all these other people that are investing.
And
you know,
let's
long answer to get to the point that Rometty's going to have a long, if she stays in, she's going to have a tough time reversing this downward trend, because it isn't a cash problem, it's a cultural problem. Does that make sense, Jim?
Yeah, it's a great insight. Now, I want to get down to the human level so that people can really get inside the suffering that's been going on. For one thing, resource actions have been going on since Gerstner, which would make this almost 30 years of resource. You talk about human relations has become human resources. Start off saying how was employee morale destroyed, and how did the employees become so disengaged?
I think what resource actions what resource actions do in their very core is they convince every employee within IBM that performance doesn't matter. The resource actions are indiscriminate. It doesn't matter how profitable your individual division is. It doesn't matter how productive your individual unit is. You know that when resource actions hit, that you're going to give up your percentage of people, and it doesn't matter, you know, what your previous rank was, how you were evaluated. And what it does is it basically convinces employees that productivity doesn't matter. And that's the reason, Jim, that I really focus on sales productivity and profit productivity, because when you send those messages to your employees, they're not disgruntled. They may be disillusioned, but when you send those kind of messages with a human resources policy, it's got to show up in your productivity. And then all you've got left is financial engineering to keep your profits up.
Tell people what a typical RA day, a resource action day, is like, just the level of stress. And you talk about it, you know, people calling each other and the whisper numbers and the whole deal. Talk about it.
Yeah. I describe one in my book, as you have talked about. I also took that incident and put it up on LinkedIn to kind of just let your listeners know. It's had over 70,000 reads.
Wow.
And it is a very emotional time. Generally, employees know it's coming. I mean, there's no way it's kept quiet. People talk about it. And in the incident I share, I was with the company in 2009, and I was in the most profitable division that IBM had, software group. And we had the whisper number, 17,000 people are going to be gone within 24 hours. People's performance appraisals have been dropped within the last, you know, 60 to 90 days, and everybody pretty much assumed that if your performance appraisal was dropped, that you were on the list. And it started bright and early. I've had stories where people were called on vacation with their kids in their rooms in Paris, woke up from a dead sleep to be told they'd been resourced. One story I'll share, Jim, if we have time, it's just a heart-wrenching story, is that one manager just didn't tell his employee because he needed that employee to perform at an event in front of some other IBMers. He was afraid that he wouldn't go. One of my friends who was a manager walked in and commented to the young man before he went on stage to talk to the IBMers, saying how professional he was to having been just resourced and still show up to do that presentation. And he found out, you know, 5 minutes before doing that presentation that he had been resourced. He collected himself. I almost get in tears thinking about it. Collected himself, went out, did his presentation, and caught the next flight home. You can't do these kind of things to employees and not expect that those that are left over have a bad taste in their mouth. And
what I have trouble with, and it's kind of an indictment of senior manager, is, you know, sometimes these things have to happen in the real world now, but this has been going on without stop for 30 years, although IBM now covers up when they're doing it. And the other interesting thing is, and you can talk about why that has been so incessant. The other thing is IBM now has more employees in India, 130,000, than in the U.S.,
Yeah, well, I mean, basically what they've been doing is what they did, you know, with similar to the lease rental program sell-off, is they've been exchanging what I call a very highly motivated, highly productive and therefore highly paid employee for lower paid employees that then have lower motivation and lower productivity. It's taking, I think one of the statistics that, if I can find it here, is the impact of sales productivity on IBM's numbers, and hopefully we have time here. If IBM produced 79, we talked about it, $79.9 billion at the end of 2016. If they had just had and maintained productivity similar to 1999, their headcount of 414,000 that they had in 2016 should have produced not 79.9, but $147 billion in revenue. $147 billion instead of 79.9. A different way of looking at that from a almost a negative perspective is that that $79.9 billion, if they'd maintained the productivity, could have been delivered by almost 200,000 fewer employees. And those are staggering numbers, Jim.
Wow. You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations, WGCH, Greenwich, and Yale Radio, WYBC. In our final national segment, we'll look at fixing IBM.
National Funding Group has just released $100 million in easy access small business funding to businesses that gross at least $100,000 a year. You can have fast access up to $500,000 in new business capital in as little as 48 hours. Think about the ways you could grow your business if you had up to $500,000 cash infusion. Call a NFG funding expert now. The process is easy. It only takes about 5 minutes. Then our management-owned lending team looks at your application for a fast approval. You can get 100% funded in about 2 days. If you need up to $500,000 in working capital to run your business and you gross at least $100,000 a year, call NFG and apply today. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. 800-296-1564. That's 800-296-1564.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. Call 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. 800-223-0092. That's 800-223-0092.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services or by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Biz Talk Radio.
Our guest, author Peter Grulich, expert on IBM, and as we talked about at the beginning, you think moving towards stakeholder value away from the financial engineering is key. First question, should Ginni Rometty be fired?
She's not mine to fire, I'm afraid. I think she needs to be replaced. She's had the time in office. She's been in, you know, as long as John Akers. She says she's reversed the roadmaps, but hasn't. The same, you know, processes are in place. She doesn't understand human motivation.
Which is my second,
what's made IBM successful.
Second question, then. What are the attributes the new CEO has to have?
That's a great question. One of the reviews I got on my book is when they read about the attributes, I've come to call this the Jimmy Stewart CEO test, because it sounds like I'm describing Jimmy Stewart. There's four tests that I apply. One is I call it the desire and ability test. You know, does the CEO have the desire to distribute profits equitably? If you look at Watson Sr., he actually, you know, took cuts in pay so that he could pay his employees properly. And do they display the ability to adapt as necessary? And that would be the failure of Lou Gerstner. In 1999, he failed to adapt and understand what was going on. And then there's the know thyself test. You know, do you, as a CEO, have do you understand what your strong mental aptitudes are and your weaknesses? And do you understand how to play those strengths and weaknesses within a corporate society to get your job done? The other one is know others test. And that's Frank Carey. I mean, he carried that company through the 70s because he understood his people. He was passionate to his people. He said he stayed awake at night worrying about getting things done. Yes, he made mistakes, but I think they were very human mistakes. And the last one I call the Vulcan mind meld test. You know, you see Spock walking up and putting his hands on somebody's face and saying, you need to understand what I want to get done, and I need to understand you. But it's more like, as Watson Jr. said, you need to have all these ways of communicating with your employees. In the 20th century, is called management by wandering around, right? Talking to people, communicating with them. And you need a variety of ways to get your feedback as a CEO. And do you have a CEO that does that? And I think, you know, Ginni Rometty just fails on most of these tests.
Now, Warren Buffett always says that, you know, you need a moat. A competitive moat for long-term value creation. Do you think IBM's moat is its culture, and can it get it back?
What a great question, Jim, because I've been thinking about that since I've been writing this book. You know, I believe IBM has great castle walls. I believe it has great moats, you know, to use Warren Buffett's analogy. I think what Warren Buffett forgot is that, you know, if you have a moat around a castle, is it just a pleasant water course if you don't have enthusiastic, engaged, and passionate defenders? And what Watson Sr. did was he put up on those battlements, which is the, you know, the place where the knights would walk on those castles. You got to have somebody shooting arrows and throwing rocks and pouring hot oil down. And I think if you remember back to the 20th century, there was a phrase that identified IBM, and it was, you won't lose your job. Nobody lost their job buying IBM. And that was a statement of belief in those people, that passion of the employees to do what was right by the customer. So I'd go back to Warren Buffett and say, hey, Warren, you need to not only talk about high walls and moats, but you need to talk about passionate, engaged, and enthusiastic defenders.
All right, now you're calling for returning to business first rather than paper financial engineering first, investing in people. What do you mean by the knowledge industry production floor, the sort of this reform vision you have there?
Well, if you look at my book cover, we actually defined that book cover on what I consider a knowledge industry production floor, and it was a company called 99 Designs. We'd hit a brick wall on creativity. We went and looked at, you know, asked IBMers what it should look like, and we just kept hitting brick walls. And we went to 99 Designs, which basically breaks down international borders. And that cover was designed by a young man in the Philippines. I hung on to my local group because in Austin, Texas, and they did the final touches on it. But we needed to break a boundary. And this knowledge industry production floor is where you start bringing together the true top people from around the world. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're in the Philippines or Malaysia, and you figure out how to reward them and bring forward the best products and the best intuition and the best inventive ideas. And those are forming today. And I think, you know, the new millennial generation will understand what I'm talking about, right? It's the social media somehow being used in a new way to get the best and the brightest to contribute to your project.
Interesting.
Does that make sense, Jim?
Why did work at home fail?
I have, another LinkedIn that's gotten up, I think, to about 20,000 hits. But it was seen as a benefit, right? Fundamentally, if you don't invest in work at home as a productivity tool and track productivity, and really prove that employees are more productive at home, which I believe they are, then corporate starts to think of it as a benefit. And if they think it's just a benefit that you give an employee and doesn't have a true productivity impact, you can start doing things like co-location and say, hey, all the employees, why don't you come back into the office? And you're not making a good business decision at that point, right? You're making a decision based on no data. Which is really strange to do for a company that's, you know, heading down the path to artificial
intelligence. So you think that they basically shot a productive way of organizing themselves. How do they return to relationship-driven sales? I mean, you talk about the sales productivity being so down.
Right. But, I mean, in the past, and this is, you know, an area where you'd have to have a CEO go out and say, we're going to get back to having relationships with our customers. What you have to do is develop products that inspire integrity in your sales force. When I sold for IBM, I really rarely sold a product. We'd talk about speeds and feeds, but I would spend half my time talking about IBM and how IBM wouldn't let them fail and how IBM had the depth of support and the knowledge to make things happen. And you need a sales force that just believes that in their core. And I talk about a few companies in the past in my book, Royal Typewriter, George Ed Smith, and he talked about, you know, how a salesman, when they're looking at a company, should say, you know, it's 25% on me and it's 75% on if you've got the right products that meet customers and have true value in the customer's eyes. Does that make sense?
Been a fascinating interview, a lot of insights here, and you finished the book up, IBM's Future Lies in Uniting Its Stakeholder Community. I want to thank Peter Grulich. The book is Think Again, IBM Can Maximize Shareholder Value. And for that book right now, you can buy the print edition on Amazon and get the Kindle version for $2.99 rather than the usual $9.99 and give the Kindle away for Christmas or give the paperback, the paper version away. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. You can get our podcasts on iTunes at the network, biztalkradio.com. Our YouTube versions, you can search Biz Talk with Jim Campbell or Park City Productions 06604. Thanks to Peter Grulich. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio,